Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, A-R-M-O-I-R-E.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. On July 16th, 2019, a young father was spending the 4th of July weekend with his wife and son and his in-laws in Gearing, Nebraska. 25-year-old Chance Engelbert was a new father and was getting ready to start a new job after being recently laid off. It was a relaxing weekend with family that included a trip to the local rodeo and a round of golf. But after an argument at that golf outing, Chance was upset. He told his wife Bailey that he wanted to cut their trip short and go back to their home in Moorcroft, Wisconsin. When they returned to Bailey's grandparents' house where they were staying, Chance said he wanted to take a walk to cool off. He never returned. Now, 3 years later, two families have been torn apart and authorities are still asking, what happened to Chance Engelbert? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Chance Engelbert. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. We are happy to be back in the same state as each other.
Yes. so much traveling. Happy that that's over, at least for now.
Yes. And we are very happy to be recording this new episode for you all together in the same room. Thank you for bearing with us last week with our, you know, first attempt at long distance recording. It wasn't the best, but you know, we'll make it better next time. We're trying. So this week we have another kind of more recent case, and it's interesting how many cases like this involving young men also seemingly involve bodies of water. Like, we've covered several just on this podcast, like right off the top of my head, Bryceless Pisa, Ralph Jean Marie. Both of them disappeared near bodies of water and, you know, have been said to potentially be in there. And that's the same with this case as well. We'll get into all of it. But first, we have a few quick shout outs to people who have joined us over on Patreon. So thank you so much to Jenna S., Becky M., and Angela J.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to get these episodes early and, more importantly, ad-free, you can do so for as little as $2 a month over at patreon.com/attwgpod. But for now, let's get into the story of Chance Engelbert. Chance Leslie Engelbert was born on December 3rd, 1993 in Burdock, South Dakota to Dawn and Everett Engelbert. He has two younger brothers, Miles and Clay. All three of them are about 3 years apart. So yeah, three boys, 3 years apart each. Like, that is quite a household. Chance grew up loving the outdoors and working with his hands. His family owns a ranch, and so he was a ranch kid. He helped his parents out with everything. And his dream was ultimately to come back and work on the ranch. When Chance was a kid, he attended a rodeo Bible camp in Underwood, South Dakota. It was there that he found his love of rodeo riding. He continued the sport all throughout his teens and 20s, earning a collection of ribbons and scholarships along the way. Chance started out bareback horse riding, and that was his first love, and that's what he primarily did, but he also graduated to full-on bull riding. Chance was so talented that he earned himself a bareback riding scholarship, and in 2012, he attended Laramie County Community College in Cheyenne, Wyoming. In 2015, he earned a degree in diesel mechanics and welding. While he was in college, he lived with his Aunt Katie. So Katie wasn't his actual aunt. She was just a good friend of the family, but Aunt Katie is what he called her. And just as a random coincidence that I found out as I was, you know, researching this, Katie lives in Gillette, Wyoming, which is the teeny tiny town from where Irene Gakwa went missing earlier this year.
Come on.
I know, right? Katie got Chance a job at the local coal mine, and he worked there during the summers. After graduation, he continued to live with Aunt Katie while he got his start in life, but eventually moved in with a friend. Chase started working full-time at Eagle Butte Coal Mine in Gillette and was transferred to Bel Air Mine. Can you get more rugged frontier man than, like, growing up on a ranch, riding bareback horses and bulls, and working in a coal mine?
Yeah, it's interesting. You said that his degree was in welding, though, right?
Yeah, and actually, that is what he did. He was apparently a welder, like, at the coal mine.
Okay,
yeah.
So he wasn't, like, actually in the coal mine.
I don't think so, but I don't really know how all of that works, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I would imagine open flame in a coal mine, probably not the best idea.
Perhaps, yes.
Or, you know, what, any type of welding?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I would imagine he's not actually in the mine. He just works for the mining company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, I mean.
Oh, yeah, no.
Come on.
Like, way manlier than I could ever be.
Exactly. Injuries eventually forced Chance to step back from bull riding, though he still loved attending rodeos. Chance soon found a new passion in demolition derby. According to his mother, Dawn, Chance, his brother, Clay, and their father spent hours together building cars. They competed together at the Fall River County Fair in 2018 and had plans to compete in the summer of 2019 and beyond. So once he couldn't ride bulls, he decided to just crash cars.
As you do.
Exactly. In 2017, he met Bailey Bewley, who was only about 18 at the time. They had known of each other for a while, though, as Bailey's ex-boyfriend did rodeo with Chance's younger brother. Bailey told the Vanished podcast that after she broke up with her boyfriend, she and Chance started talking and things took off from there. They were married a year later in October of 2018. So she was around 19, he was around 24. I don't know if this was the entire reason for the marriage or exactly what. I do know that Chance comes from a very religious family and was very religious himself. But Bailey was pregnant when they walked down the aisle. Their son Banks was born in April of 2019. Because it sounds like, you know, the wedding and everything happened kind of quickly. At the beginning of their marriage, the couple lived with Chance's childhood friend, DJ. Now, DJ was also interviewed for the Vanish podcast, and he described Chance and Bailey's relationship this way. Quote, some days better than others. They'd argue every now and then. Not a whole lot, but she'd accuse him of doing stupid stuff that he'd never do and get mad at him for talking to his mom too much. Just immature high school stuff, I guess, is the way to explain it. End quote.
Well, she was young.
Well, exactly. She's 19. So, like, basically, it is immature high school stuff, right? I mean, except for the fact that she's married with a child now. Well, actually, at that point, she was just pregnant, but, you know,
right.
You get the point.
Yeah, so there's that, too. I mean, there's the hormones from being pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, and then basically being a child herself. So, yeah.
And this whole new life, like, living with a roommate, you know, it's just...
Yeah, it's
a lot.
It's tough. It's tough.
Interestingly, Bailey characterizes the relationship differently, saying, quote, we honestly never really argued about anything. And if we did have a problem, it was resolved pretty quickly and it was pretty easy to be married to him. End quote. I'm not saying that this discrepancy is nefarious or anything like that. I personally think that it's natural to downplay any marital issues when you're being interviewed about your missing husband.
I mean, that's probably the smart way to do it.
You know, I mean, because this interview took place 3 or 4 months after he went missing. So it was still pretty new.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to portray a positive relationship.
Well, yeah. And the relationship could have been overall positive. I mean, you know, what the roommate saw with the little tiffs or whatever that they were having could have been completely trivial. But overall the relationship was happy.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? So I don't put a whole lot of stock into this.
Dawn, however, Chance's mom, does also characterize the marriage as a bit rocky and says that she had actually urged them on more than one occasion to get couples counseling. It doesn't seem like Dawn and Bailey really got along very well, but apparently Bailey would also call Dawn to complain about Chance, which seems like a weird move to me. I've read from, you know, like multiple accounts of her, of Bailey getting mad at Chance for talking to his mom too much and like of her being too much a part of things. But either way, Dawn said that during one of these calls, she told Bailey, quote, "Bailey, if you really think he's that bad, just leave him," end quote.
But that's coming from Dawn.
Yeah.
Saying this.
Mm-hmm.
Not calling Dawn a liar, but, you know, it's different. Different perspectives.
Well, exactly. And I think that's really what we're going to see in this case, right? Because you just have these different perspectives and people's words and actions being taken in a certain way.
Out of context most of the time.
Yeah. And it's just like, okay, yeah, maybe, but maybe also this is the explanation for that. So, you know, again, we'll talk about more about that, but that really is a big hallmark of this case. Now, speaking of downplaying relationship strife, it appears that Dawn may have been doing that as well on this podcast interview. Like I said, the Vanish podcast, very good show. Allegedly, Chance and Dawn had argued the week before his disappearance, and it had something to do with Bailey or his marriage or, you know, something along those lines. And apparently his brother Miles thought that Chance was being disrespectful to their mother, so he told him to get out and don't come back.
Okay. Was the younger brother, you said?
Yeah. Right. You know, being the big man. Like, I think it's the youngest brother. So he's like, you know, 18, 19 at the time.
Oh.
Kind of thing.
Same age as his wife.
Exactly. Well, that's because his wife's brother and he were, you know, in the same division in rodeo.
Right.
So apparently they weren't really on speaking terms when Chance left for Nebraska on that 4th of July weekend.
He and Dawn?
He and Dawn, and really his like whole family, like his parents and his brother.
Gotcha.
In fact, he was apparently originally supposed to spend that weekend with his parents, who were still in South Dakota, but Bailey convinced him to go visit her family in Nebraska instead. We are talking about three different states here, just to be clear, because it does get a little bit confusing. So Bailey and Chance lived in Wisconsin. Bailey is from Nebraska. That's where her family lived. Chance is from South Dakota. That's where his family lives. We're only talking about a relatively small geographical area, though. So each family was just a, you know, 3-ish hour drive from their home in Wisconsin. But backing up a little bit, after they were married in October of 2018, Chance bought a home for his new family about a month later. So again, you know, they were living with his friend, but not for terribly long. By November, he had closed on this, you know, cute little house in Wyoming. His job at the mine was going well, and in April, he and Bailey became parents. Unfortunately, on July 1st, 2019, the Bel Air mine was abruptly closed when its operator filed for bankruptcy. So Chance, who is the family's only breadwinner, was laid off along with like 600 other workers. This was, of course, stressful, but Chance is resilient and talented, so he quickly secured a new position with Blaxman Propane, which he was supposed to start on Monday, July 8th. So like literally, I mean, that dude got a job just like that, like was back at work the next week, or was supposed to be. With this whole job drama and this possible fight with his family, Chance was seemingly under a lot of stress the week leading up to his disappearance. Plus, you know, yes, they were visiting Bailey's family and they were doing fun things, but apparently like the relationship between him and her family also wasn't the greatest. I don't think there was maybe as much animosity as there was between Bailey and his family, but it still wasn't a wonderful situation from what it sounds like.
Sounds to me like nobody wanted them to get married.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of get that impression, honestly. Mm. But again, she was pregnant. And so the families are just like, all right, this is happening. You know, we're going to go with it. So despite all of this, the trip to Gearing, which is about a 3.5-hour drive away from their Moorcroft, Wyoming home, started off, you know, pretty good. They were staying with Bailey's grandparents, and on the 4th, they went to the Bridgeport Rodeo. Bailey took a selfie, which is on her blog, and it shows a happy-looking couple with their baby. That Saturday, the 6th, Chance decided to go on a golf outing with the boys, despite the fact that he, like, wasn't really a golfer. He'd apparently only been, you know, 3 or 4 times in his entire life. But, you know, he's also the father of an infant, and he's had a stressful week, so the opportunity to drink beer and drive around on a golf cart probably sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
So he joined Bailey's father, Scott, and her sister's boyfriend, Kyler, at the Chimney Rock Golf Course in Bayard, Nebraska. And just as a side note, like, he's such a cowboy and not a golfer, he went golfing in Wrangler jeans, a short sleeve button down shirt, and cowboy boots.
Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah. Police apparently never pulled video from the clubhouse, but it does seem like there was some video surveillance from the golf course itself, although that's not 100% confirmed. I have seen reference to photos taken that day that seem like they were stills from video. But the bartender who was working at the club that day remembers the trio coming in.
Why? What stood out? I mean, his dress, his attire.
I mean, probably, yes, honestly. And what happened at the end of their trip was definitely memorable. And also, it doesn't really seem like they were that busy that day, which kind of surprises me for a Saturday and a holiday weekend. But yeah, apparently there just weren't a lot of people in the clubhouse. Hmm. So this bartender says that the group was there from about 3 to 6:30, which seems kind of short to me for a round of golf, especially when you don't have, like, really good players with you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about golf, but I have been told that a round should be, like, 3 to 4 hours.
Right. And so this does fit into that, it just definitely seems on the shorter side of it.
But if they weren't busy, you know, maybe they didn't have to wait.
Right, exactly.
So,
according to her, they purchased an 18-pack of beer early on and then came back and bought another one. Now, 36 beers is a lot for 3 guys, but keep in mind that we don't know if they finished the second pack or, you know, how the drinks were distributed or anything like that. You know, just because they bought 36 beers doesn't mean that all 36 beers were drank. I mean, we've been in that situation before where you're like, oh yeah, we definitely need more. And then you realize, like, oh, we actually do not. We're good.
Yeah. It also could have been like Natty Ice.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 3% beers, you know?
Yeah.
Mostly water or whatever. Like, we don't know what they bought.
36 beers, that to me doesn't mean that each person had 12, you know?
Right.
No one disputes that Chance was drinking that day, but again, we just don't really know how much.
Sure. He was golfing with his family, with his brother-in-law and his father-in-law. Like, why wouldn't you drink?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that the whole point of golfing?
Right.
Like, I don't golf. The only thing that's ever, I've been invited many times and I'm like, I don't golf. And the only thing that's ever said to me is just come along and drink. Like, I can just do that from the house. But I digress. Point being, yeah, he had some beers.
Now, according to the bartender, again, when they came back after their round of golf, Scott and Chance were drunk. Now, Scott is Bailey's father. She even described Chance as falling down drunk, but said that Kyler seemed relatively sober.
So maybe Kyler was the DD.
Yeah, I don't know what the original plan was or how the three of them got to the golf course. I just know that Chance did not drive himself to the golf course because, you know, he and Bailey had one car because they traveled there. So, like, he wasn't going to take the car and leave it at the golf course all day, you know, while she had the baby. So I don't know if she drove him or if he got a ride with one or both of them. But in any case, Chance did not drive. Chance and Bailey were supposed to meet friends for dinner that evening, and Chance called Bailey to come pick him up. Now, this is where stories start to diverge. Bailey says that when Chance called her, he was in a really good mood. But the bartender says that he was angry and belligerent and was rude to her.
Over the phone?
No.
Or rude to the bartender?
The bartender, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
what's not completely clear is if that, you know, belligerent and rude behavior was before or after the argument. At the end of this whole thing, it sounds like when they were back at the clubhouse, either Scott or Kyler, it hasn't been specified who, made a comment about Chance's new job and like basically how he wasn't making a lot of money. It was just something to that effect, like, you know, just something dumb, like just a shitty little comment. But whatever was said was enough to piss Chance off. So by the time Bailey got to the golf course, like he was ready to get the hell out of the entire state of Nebraska. Like as far as he was concerned, their trip was over. When Bailey arrived, she and the baby, you know, came into the clubhouse and Chance said, quote, "Get the fuck back in the car. We're leaving," end quote.
Where did that quote come from?
From Bailey. Bailey's.
Oh, from Bailey.
From Bailey.
So not even the bartender.
Not even the bartender. The bartender did say something similar. I think her version was, "Get your ass back in the car. We're leaving."
Okay.
Either way.
Yeah.
That both of them say that he said something to that effect.
Okay.
Bailey, you know, like I did, so she said that was from the Vantage podcast. And she also said, quote, "So I was kind of looking at everyone and they're looking at me and everyone is just super confused," end quote. Which seems right, because again, it does sound like an overreaction to somebody saying something shitty about a job you haven't started yet.
Well, yeah, but let's take it from Chance's perspective. He just got laid off. He has a new wife, new baby. He's clearly super stressed out.
Yeah.
Managed to pick up a job. And yeah, maybe somebody quipped, you know, something offhand, half joking, but you have a stressful week like that. I mean, I could see how that could set you off, especially if you're drinking.
Exactly. And that's kind of what Bailey says. She's like, he had been drinking just enough that like you couldn't reason with him, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I'm not defending somebody that's, you know, intoxicated or whatever, but like I can see getting to that point how it could happen, I should say.
Right. But, and we've all been in that situation. Like we've all seen that. Like yeah. We've all seen the person who just turns on a dime and it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like what is going on?
Took something the wrong way.
Exactly.
It has underlying shit that they're going through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whoever said whatever didn't know it was going to trigger them in right. That way. Like, yeah, for sure.
And that's exactly what this sounds like. But here's where we get back to Bailey, perhaps downplaying marital strife.
Okay.
So she goes on to say that she and Chance didn't have an argument at all. He was just upset about what happened at the golf course and that whole comment and whatever. But like personally, I don't buy that. This is a couple who people say argued fairly frequently. And now like you and I rarely argue. But if you had gotten into an argument with somebody in my family and then yelled at me to get the fuck back in the car when I came to pick your drunk ass up, like we would be having some words on the drive home. So yeah, I just do not buy that the entire drive home. She's like, do, 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 do. Like everything's cool. Like I can't, I'm sorry. And maybe that's me projecting, but it just does not seem reasonable.
No, it's 100% you projecting, because we don't know the relationship that Bailey had with her family. And yes, while maybe on the surface things are good, like maybe her family says shitty stuff like that to her too.
Yeah, maybe.
And she understands where her drunk husband is coming from.
Yeah, but he still told her to get the fuck back in the car.
I know. I'm not defending it. I'm simply playing devil's advocate here, and
nobody likes the devil's advocate.
Well, okay, but you were still projecting.
I agree.
You
I agree.
Were saying what
I agree.
You would have done in that situation.
I absolutely was, and that is true. But in addition to that not making a lot of sense to me, you know, her saying that they didn't argue at all, there's the timeline issue. Now, the bartender claims that they left around 6:30. And according to Bailey, you know, they left and they drove straight to her grandparents' house to get their things. they pull in and Chance is like still angry and says something to the effect of, I told you I wanted to go home. You know, as in like, why are we back at your grandparents' house? Like, I want to go to Wyoming.
Oh, like from the golf course.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's like, okay, I know, but you know, we've got to go get our stuff. Bailey says that Chance left the car, took off walking. So she's like, oh my God, you know, she gets the baby out of the car, takes him inside, gets him out of the car seat, gives him to her grandmother, and then goes outside after Chance. Now, when she first told the story, it sounded like by the time she got out there, he was already gone. But then she said later that she watched him walk away until she couldn't see him anymore. Now, the problem with this, though, is that she says all of this happened at around 7:30, like between 7:20 and 7:30. The golf course is only a 25-minute drive from her grandparents' house. So we're missing about a half an hour somewhere if they did, in fact, leave at 6:30, like the bartender said.
So 6:30 to 6:50, 6:55-ish, 6:55, let's say, they get to her grandparents' house. And then she says that he doesn't walk away until 7:30?
No. So what she's saying is they left the golf course, drove to grandparents' house. As soon as they got there, he walked away. But
so that should have been just before 7.
Exactly. But it wasn't until actually, apparently, closer to 7:30. And that makes sense based on phone records as well.
Was there anybody else in the house?
Her grandmother was, yeah.
Did grandmother corroborate that timeline?
She hasn't spoken publicly, so I don't know.
Okay.
So what we don't know is if the bartender was wrong, and maybe they left closer to 7, and you know that would explain why all this happened at 7:30.
Right.
Or if maybe they left the clubhouse at 6:30, but didn't necessarily leave the golf course at 6:30. You know, meaning like maybe they got into the car in the parking lot and had a discussion before driving home. Another weird thing about this is a local woman named Trudy Domson says that she had seen Chance walking alongside the highway around 5:35 p.m., a few miles west of the Baird turnoff, which in Baird is where the golf course was, walking east on the north shoulder of the road. She says he was dressed exactly as Chance is described, did not appear drunk, and was walking with a long stride and appeared normal. But that sighting doesn't mesh with either timeline.
To include the bartender's timeline.
Exactly. Yeah, so it doesn't match with the bartender's timeline. It doesn't match with Bailey's timeline. It doesn't match anything.
Well, I think more than one person in Nebraska probably wears jeans and a button down.
And also, she allegedly started a Facebook group to like discuss this case and give theories. So like, take that for what you will.
Seems to me like she's reaching.
Yeah, like maybe somebody could kind of wants to, you know, be a part of things.
Yeah.
And I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the lead investigator on the case now says that they've gotten a lot of tips and have interviewed a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, I heard this thing, I heard that thing, I saw this, I saw that. And he's like, and then we question them and it turns out that they're just making it up like to be a part of it.
Really?
Yeah. He said that that's just been an issue for them.
Is there really like that little going on in that area?
I mean,
that they're all like reaching to be a part of this missing person case.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but there is that. There's this alleged sighting at 5:30, but I don't really know what to make of that, if anything. What we do know is that Chance called his good friend Matt Miller at 7:23 p.m. and asked for a ride. So that's how we know he was like by the grandparents' house at this time, because he called Matt at 7:23 and like told him what was going on, where he was.
So he asked for a ride from the grandparents' house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, even though Bailey allegedly said, yeah, we can go home, we just have to get our stuff, that wasn't like good enough for him. He wanted to go now. So he just took off, called a friend to come pick him up. The problem is that like Matt lived 4 hours away And it was 4th of July weekend. He had people over. He had been drinking. And he's like, listen, man, I want to help you out, but like, I cannot physically go get you right now. But he's like, I'll make calls for you and I'll try to find somebody who can.
Well, that's more than I would have done.
No, I'm serious. This guy, and I really don't talk about him much more, although he does play a pretty big part in this. Like, Matt Miller remains very dedicated to Chance and this case. Like, he would come up to Nebraska every weekend that he could and search on his own. I mean, he's done interviews. Like, he has worked very hard to find his friend. So yes, I mean, maybe it was more than you would do, but like, this guy seems just like a really good friend. So anyway, Chance takes off walking. And like I mentioned, Bailey initially said that he was gone when she came back outside, but then later said she saw him walk away. I don't know. But she does say that she did drive around and looked for him and tried to, you know, call him and text him. She said that she last spoke with him, like, I guess he answered. I don't know if he answered the phone or if he texted her back, but around 7:45, she says it's like the last contact she had with him. So that's after he left. But she apparently drove around and could not find him. And she must have been looking for over an hour with no luck, which seems weird to me given that he was on foot. But she says that she went out, looked for him until the storm hit, which happened around 9 p.m. And the storm was a big one, too. There were flash flood warnings, like the whole deal. I mean, we're talking a major storm. So it makes sense that that would cause her to stop looking. She also must have assumed that, you know, he would come back on his own. So she returned to her grandparents' house. But Chance didn't go back. This is what we know about his journey that evening. At 7:28, two different surveillance cameras catch Chance walking down 10th Street in Gearing. According to Dawn, he is walking normally. He's seen on another video at 7:51 p.m. in front of Weathercraft Roofing. And this is also on 10th Street. That's a 23-minute gap. But those two locations are only 0.2 miles apart, about a 4-minute walk, according to Google Maps. So it took him 23 minutes to walk, to make a 4-minute walk. So I don't know what he was doing in the meantime, if he had stopped, if he's just like standing around texting, calling people, whatever. But there is quite a large gap in a very short distance. But I also find it interesting because, you know, if Bailey was out driving around looking for him for an hour and a half and he was apparently stopped for a good 20 minutes, like, that seems even weirder that she didn't see him. Because he's out on 10th Street, which it's a well-traveled road with businesses. Like, he's not off in the woods somewhere.
The only thing that I would say to that is that we don't know precisely what direction of travel he initially started off in. So maybe she followed that line and maybe he didn't.
Right, exactly. Like, there was basically out of the grandparents' neighborhood, he could have made a right or a left.
Right.
And I forget which way he went, but based on their surveillance video, you know, they can kind of see which way he went. But you're right. We don't know.
So maybe she went the opposite way.
She might have, yeah.
Yeah, just thinking whatever.
Right.
But I do find it interesting that you keep saying getting these surveillance videos or images or whatever. Mm-hmm. All of the timelines items that you've mentioned have been, quote unquote, according to Dawn. Is this a case where we have no official timeline from the police department?
No, we do. And when I say according to Dawn on, in terms of that video.
Or is that just what that just she said in another interview?
Yeah, but according to her, it is definitely him.
Okay.
And he was walking normally.
Okay.
So those are two, that's all I meant. So like, the police did release the surveillance footage, but she's the one who confirmed that like it looked normal to her.
Okay. I just wasn't sure whether this was going to be another one like where the police were just like not talking for no reason whatsoever.
Not so much, no. Okay. Then At 8:01, there's a Ring doorbell camera that allegedly shows Chance in front of an apartment building located at 48 Terry Boulevard. Now, this person isn't really close to the camera, so it's difficult to be positive that it is Chance. That location is about 0.4 miles away from Weathercraft Roofing, which, according to Google Maps, would be about a 9-minute walk. So the timing does work. Like, it's a 9-minute walk and he's seen 10 minutes later. In this video, the man presumed to be Chase is seen walking down the street in a silver or white SUV that appears to be a Jeep Grand Cherokee, comes driving quickly down Terry Boulevard and brakes. According to Mia Gonzalez, who owns that Ring doorbell, she saw Chance, or the person she believes to be Chance, get into a silver car that night. Now, while all this is happening, while he's walking around gearing, his friend Matt calls Chance's mom. He tells Dawn about the call he got from Chance and asks her if she can go pick him up. Dawn does here seemingly allude to the argument that she and Chance had because, according to her, she said, quote, "Well, Matt, I'm not sure if he'll want to talk to us, but either his uncle or somebody will reach out and try to get him," end quote. Dawn says that she had Chance's uncle reach out to him, then his aunt, then his dad, and finally her, but they never received a response.
And we're assuming that this is all potentially corroborated by cell phone records.
Yeah, they've had Chance's cell phone records since pretty early on. The last text sent from Chance's phone was to his Aunt Katie at 9:08 p.m. It was jumbled, though. So there are two texts. One was "I'm" and an emoji, like the straight mouth line emoji. And then the second one was just jumbled letters. They said that they don't think that Chance sent that because he never used emojis and also didn't make any sense. But to me, just looking at the text, and we'll have those posted as well, it looks like a pocket text. Or like when you accidentally hit the microphone thing, like the voice to text thing. And, you know, it gets all weird. Like, that's kind of what it seemed like to me. The family said, you know, we don't think that he's the one who sent this, but it doesn't seem like the kind of situation that we've seen before where somebody takes the missing person's phone and, like, is pretending to be them to make their loved ones think that they're alive and okay.
No, because it would have a deliberate message on it.
Exactly. This really does seem like a pocket text or something happened to the phone. Cell phone pings put his phone near Riverview Golf Course, but police say that he could have been anywhere within a 2-mile radius of that cell tower, which does cover the area where he was last seen in Garrig. After that, his phone was either shut off or went dead. Chance's friend, Matt Miller, believes that it was the former because Chance told him that he had a full battery when they had spoken earlier. So around this time of the last text, 9:08, it is absolutely pouring rain in Garing, and Bailey and the Engelberts are having very different experiences at this point. Bailey is at her grandparents' house, assuming that Chance will slink in the door at some point. Meanwhile, the Engelberts are getting more and more concerned that Chance isn't responding to any of them. Everett, his father, decided to reach out to Chance and Bailey's neighbor, Larry, who was a family friend and also used to work with Chance.
I'm sorry, just one thing with the timeline and the silver Jeep. Mm-hmm. On the Ring doorbell, timeline for that is
8:01.
8:01. Gets into a silver Jeep, right?
Mm-hmm. Silver, white, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, sure. And we don't know if it's actually him.
Right.
But then the last known ping from his cell phone is an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
What's the location difference between those two?
Were it's they within that 2-mile radius.
Okay, well, so that, I mean, it doesn't change the timeline, but it doesn't lead me to believe that whoever that was, if that was the person mm-hmm. getting in, if it was him getting into the Jeep, that whoever was driving the Jeep was taking him home or anywhere.
Exactly.
So that's either a false lead, and that wasn't him, or that's where something nefarious happened.
Yeah, and it happened close by.
Right.
And, you know, they didn't just drive around this 2-mile radius for an hour. I think, you know, if something nefarious did happen, if that was chance, you know, it would have happened probably pretty shortly after he got into the Jeep, but then something happened to the phone
during
and this weird random jumble text got sent.
Yeah.
You know, around this time, like this evening, Everett calls the neighbor, Larry, and is like, hey, you know, did Chance try to call you? Have you heard from him? Because they were thinking that if Chance is looking for a ride, that Larry is somebody that he might have called. Larry said, no, I haven't heard from him, but let me call Bailey and see what's going on. So Larry calls Bailey.
And Larry is a neighbor of who?
Of Bailey and Chance.
Okay, so not the grandparents where they're actually staying.
No, no. Okay, so, okay. Yeah, he's in Wisconsin.
Gotcha.
So Larry reaches Bailey, and Bailey fills him in on what's going on. And so Larry is like, listen, okay, but you need to call Chance's dad. Like, you can't not call him. So Bailey did eventually call Everett and, you know, tell him herself what was going on. And Everett wanted to go out to Garing and, you know, help find Chance that night. But, you know, it was like 2.5 hours away, and Bailey told him that they were out looking, so he didn't need to come that night. You know, I'm assuming that this phone call was before 9 p.m. when the storm hit, but I'm not positive that exact timing hasn't been released. Also, like, Chance's parents figured there wouldn't be a whole lot they could do in the dark. They were worried, but Dawn was like, you know, we still thought he was just coming home, you know? So they decided to stay put in South Dakota. Bailey said that her and her family were handling it, and they're like, okay. According to Bailey, she was still assuming that Chance would make his way back eventually. You know, she thought he would just like slink in the middle of the night, whatever. Because when the storm hit, she figured that he had taken shelter somewhere and was kind of like waiting it out, and that's why he hadn't come back yet. So she ended up going to sleep around 11 p.m. When she woke up the next morning, however, there was no Chance. She, of course, tried calling him again, but he still wasn't answering. At that point, she was like, okay, this is weird. This is worrisome. So she started calling around to people to see if anybody else had heard from him. But of course, no one had. So Bailey still thought, okay, like maybe he's out. He's going through something. Maybe he did get a ride home. Like, I don't know. I'm like trying not to panic. So she tried to contact the cell phone company to see if she could figure out like where his last call was from, to see if like he, you know, he was at home or something like that before she like called the police. But Verizon wasn't really able to tell her anything. So at 11 a.m., Bailey called police and reported her husband missing. Unsurprisingly, police didn't seem to take Chance's case seriously. To them, he was drunk and he just stayed the night somewhere else because he was upset. According to Bailey, it took a day of persistent phone calls from her and Chance's family before they decided to start searching. Also, I'm sure it didn't help that this was the Sunday of a holiday weekend. I mean, you've worked Sundays of holiday weekends, like, nobody's there.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's limited staffing. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
and I do find it's interesting because a lot of these cases do take place over holiday weekends as well.
Hey, be careful over the holidays.
Yeah. Bailey and Dawn spoke Sunday afternoon, and she asked Bailey again if they should come down to Garing. Bailey told her that they were good and they didn't need them down there. And even at this point, Dawn was still thinking that Chance was going to show up. So, you know, they stayed put.
Okay. Now that's starting to trouble me, though. I have an issue with her going through all of that effort to make a missing persons report, but then telling his parents, like, nah, we're good. That just doesn't seem congruent to me. You know?
I think from her perspective, though, like, you know, she and her family were still looking, and so maybe she just thought that it wouldn't be very helpful for them to come. I don't know.
Maybe this is where I'm projecting, because I would be like, yeah, get the fuck down here.
But that's not the relationship that they had. So
that's true.
You know,
that's true.
Dawn and Everett stayed in South Dakota. They didn't go to Nebraska yet, but they were, of course, worried sick. It sounds like Everett was actually like more panicked than Dawn was. They spoke with Bailey again that evening, but by that time when they were talking, Bailey was more upset than she had been. Dawn said that she was crying and said, quote, "I just know he's coming home in a body bag," end quote.
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
By Monday morning, police were finally on board and everyone seemed to know something was very wrong. Chance's parents and brother drove down to Garing, where they met up with Bailey and her family. And, you know, they weren't supposed to get near the main searches that were going on for obvious reasons. So they all just kind of like drove around and found areas further out to search themselves. Their searches turned up nothing, so the Engelberts set their sights on the Garing police. On Monday night, they went to the station just to basically introduce themselves and, you know, let the officers know, like, how upset they were and how serious the situation was. And they did the same thing Tuesday morning. Later, Tuesday afternoon, Garing Police Captain Rogers asked Dawn and Bailey to come down to the station. He didn't have any news. He basically just wanted to reassure them that they were looking for Chance and taking the case seriously. But it was at that meeting that Bailey did something odd. She asked for Chance's death certificate.
What?
Yeah, both Dawn and Captain Rogers were, of course, taken aback by this. One, even if Chance had been found dead, the police don't issue death certificates.
True.
And two, Chance had only been missing for a few days. Like, police were searching for a man they believed to be alive, not right. a body.
Yeah. Do we know why she asked for that?
Well, not at the time, but yes, it will. We will get to that. It's like, but yeah, at the time, it was just like, it was pretty out of pocket. Searches continued with multiple agencies coming out to assist. They brought in helicopters, drones, search and rescue dogs, cadaver dogs, and four-wheelers to canvas the terrain. They looked all around Garing, nearby Scott's Bluff, and the North Platte River. They even drained the central Garing Canal to a low flow rate to allow it to be searched. But all of the searches came up with nothing. After about a week, it seems as though the active investigation pretty much ended. Police said that there was no evidence of foul play and that Chance was seen on video walking away of his own free will. Garing Police Chief George Holthus told Dateline 2 months after Chase's disappearance that their search efforts have included 147 people participating in ground searches, 2,400 acres searched, and 18 agencies assisting. Airlink logged 280 miles, and the Nebraska State Patrol helicopter logged 100 miles.
I mean, that's a pretty robust search area.
Right. It sounds like they did do a good job on that search, that physical search. But in terms of the action, like the rest of the investigation, like questioning people and things of that nature.
Sounds like they were just like, well, we didn't find a body, so he's an adult.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, the case certainly wasn't closed by any means. You know, it's to this day still open and active. But again, the resources being put into it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen open, quote unquote, active cases where it's literally sitting on the shelf and doesn't actually have a detective assigned to it. So
right. And this one does, to be fair. But anyway, so over the next several weeks, dozens of sightings were reported in both Nebraska, Wisconsin, even like Oregon and Texas, but none were deemed to be credible. After the first few weeks, the already tense relationship between Bailey and the Engelbert family completely fractured. They were suspicious that she or her family knew more about what happened that night of July 6th than they were saying. And they were also frustrated that Garing police were using Bailey as the primary point of contact because she was his wife.
She should have been the primary suspect. She was also the last known legitimate person to see him.
Yeah, true. But, you know, she's the one who reported him missing. She's the wife. So, like, it seems like they were, she was the one that they were keeping more informed. And, you know, his parents thought that it should be them. It's their son.
Yeah. I mean, sure, I can see that argument. However, it doesn't sound like they did any investigation to rule anybody out. So, not sure I would want to keep what would ordinarily be a primary suspect as the most informed person.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And you know, we'll talk a little bit more about the investigation as well. But first, like, let's talk a little bit about the theories, because it kind of all goes together.
Sure.
The very first theory was, of course, can you guess?
He started a new life?
Yep, exactly.
Sure.
But literally everyone who knows Chance said that there was a 0% chance that he would do that. Bailey said that Chance loved being a dad and would never leave their baby behind. His parents said that there was no way he would just break all contact with them. And same with his friends. Like, they said the same thing. Thankfully, after the first couple weeks, like, the police kind of stopped believing this as well. So at the very least, it wasn't a long-lived theory. The other common theory is that Chase was drunk and fell into the river and drowned. Remember, according to the bartender, he was falling down drunk. But whether he was or he wasn't at that time, the surveillance footage doesn't show a man who's stumbling around drunk. It shows a man walking with a purpose. At one point, it even looks like he's following GPS directions on his phone. Like, there's this one of the surveillance videos that I mentioned, one of the ones that's definitely him. He's walking down the street and he's like looking at his phone and he stops abruptly and then like makes a sharp like left turn, just like you're following directions and that was your turn. His friend Matt, who spoke with him that evening, also said that Chance didn't sound drunk when he spoke with him. He just sounded pissed. Besides, Chance was a ranch kid. He knew how to deal with storms. Like, he grew up next to a huge river. He knew how to stay safe. He wasn't one to just randomly try to go night swimming or, you know, something like that. Matt, and really everyone else who knew him, thinks that there's no way that Chance could have fallen into the river. And not only that, not only would it be completely out of character, he wasn't anywhere near the river at the times he was on video. So, like, he would have had to make an effort to go there. I also saw one of the dog handlers who helped search say that the way the dogs lost his scent indicated to him that Chance had left in a vehicle. Which brings us back to the Jeep.
Right.
Was that Chance on the Ring camera? And did he get into that Jeep? Dawn doesn't believe that Chance would have gotten into a car with a random person. Her belief is that if he was picked up, it was by somebody he trusted. Law enforcement is allegedly looking into the Jeep, but, you know, we don't know anything besides that.
Well, sure. I mean, legitimately, that is something they're not going to release. And
yeah.
For good reason.
Right. Unless they could definitively say, like, oh, hey, this is 100% related to this case or 100% not related to this case.
Right.
But even if the Jeep is unrelated, it's still possible that Chance was picked up by someone elsewhere.
Sure.
The other theory is that Chance was the victim of a random crime of opportunity. Apparently, the area of town that he was walking through, Tarrytown, was like a bad area. But, I mean, just given the weather and the odds, it just seems unlikely to me.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, crime... Crimes of opportunity in those circumstances, the crime is not murder.
Yeah.
It's robbery.
And even if it ends up being murder, like, they rob you, they shoot you, they leave you there. They don't hide your body so well that you can't be found 3 years later.
Exactly. Yes.
Now, what does seem likely is that whatever happened to Chance happened shortly after 9 p.m., I don't think it's a coincidence that he sent this random jumble of text shortly before his phone pinged for the very last time. And, you know, we already talked about why and, you know, what could have happened.
Right.
Now, I should say that I've read more recent articles that said that his phone last pinged around 10 p.m. But again, those articles are only articles that have come out recently, and I think it's just a mistake. Like, yeah, they just everything
got the timeline wrong.
I think so, because everything that I read that was more contemporaneous says that the last ping was shortly after that last text at 9:08. A lot of people on the internet believe that Bailey is either responsible for Chance's disappearance directly or knows what happened to him. They point to her body bag comment that she made to Dawn and the strange request for a death certificate, along with their rocky relationship and her seemingly flat affect when talking about him as proof.
Okay, well, so her, like, how she speaks about him, like, let's take that out, because yeah, that doesn't mean anything. But the random comments, more in particular, the comment about, or the question about the death certificate, what would be her motivation?
Good question. And that obviously is everybody's question, right?
Sure.
Like, that's a weird thing to ask. And my take on it is this. Well, first, the body bag comment, right? That, you know, I just know he's coming back in a body bag like the day after he disappeared. To me, that's just a 20-year-old being hysterical.
Yeah. I don't put any stock into that.
Yeah. So like that, okay, whatever. Now, the death certificate also kind of relates back to that too, right? She's 20 years old. Her husband's missing. She has a 3-month-old baby and no job. She was freaking out. And so I believe that the death certificate question was an awkward and misguided attempt to make sure that she had access to money to support herself and her child. And she said that, you know, even she and Dawn had talked about banks getting on Chance's Social Security. But in order to do that, you had to have a death certificate in for banks to get those benefits. As adults in our 40s who like know a little bit more about how the world works, yes, it's insane that you would ask for a death certificate like when your husband's been missing for 2 days, thinking that you're going to get access to like his Social Security benefits or other money. But for a 20-year-old who's panicking, who doesn't know how anything works, like I can kind of see it, honestly.
Sure. Fine. If we're going with that, that kind of gets rid of that comment. I don't see a real motivation for her to kill him. He just got laid off. Yes, he has a new job, but he hasn't started it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in theory, he has no benefits.
Right, yeah.
So, like, there's no financial gain there.
Like, apparently she tried to get, and this is a little bit later, she apparently tried to get a life insurance policy or, you know, access to a life insurance policy. But it turns out it was his father's life insurance policy, not Chance's. And people are like, oh, she was like just trying to get money. But it's like she had a baby, like she needed money.
Right. It just doesn't seem likely that she has, or at least the motivation would be money, you know, unless their relationship really was worse off than what we know of, or mm-hmm. the way she was describing it. That might be a more understandable motivation for murder or something, but it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I don't think that. And there are some wild theories out there that I'm definitely not going to get into.
Yeah, please don't.
But what I will say is that to me, just based on everything, a premeditated murder like does not make sense to me.
No, not at all.
Any reason, you know, like it just doesn't seem like what would have happened in this situation.
Look, if this was a thing with her father and brother, stemming from an argument that he had with them at the golf course, probably would have happened at the golf course. If something, not murder, but you know, so that doesn't make any sense. I just don't see her or her family as real suspects because there's no real motivation to kill him.
Yeah. I mean, I think the theory about that I can kind of see is that it was an argument between Chance and some members of her family that got out of hand. So like maybe it started at the golf course, but everything that happened after that is not accurate, meaning that she and Chance left on their own and came home. Maybe they all went to the grandparents' house and something happened there and everything else was a cover up. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm not saying it's even particularly likely, but
not given that he was seen on surveillance cameras.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
By himself.
Right. So maybe things got out of hand. Maybe it was more heated. Maybe the whole like stupid comment about money and his job wasn't what the actual argument was about.
Sure.
It got heated. Chance did leave on his own, but then somebody went after him and things escalated even further from there. We don't know what happened, but Brian Eads, who's now the lead investigator on Chance's case, going back to the death certificate comment, like he recently gave an interview to News Nation in which he said basically that he's like, she was just misguided and, you know, was trying to make sure she had money for her kid. And that's what that was about. People have also been suspicious because Bailey's family, within like a week of Chance's disappearance, retained a lawyer. Dawn apparently found that out from one of the police officers because she was like calling for information and the officer is like, well, are you being represented by, you know, whoever the lawyer was? And she's like, what are you talking about? Do I need a lawyer? Like, what is going on? Like, why would I be represented by a lawyer? And he was like, well, Bailey and her family are. So I didn't know if you were as well. So I don't know if I could, I didn't know if I could talk to you, like what I could say, et cetera, et cetera. And so Dawn was, of course, like, what the hell? Like, why does she have a lawyer? A lot of people are like, that's shady.
Is it?
Well, it's, you know, I don't know. But what I will say is that Eads, you know, the investigator, says that, yes, she does have a lawyer, he said, but she has always made herself available to me. She has always answered questions. Like, she's not trying to stonewall us at all. We've had no problems with her in terms of this investigation.
Yeah, I mean, look, what do we always say? Don't talk to cops. Right?
Never talk to the cops. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I am a cop.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, yeah, all of the audience, don't talk to cops. So I don't see it as shady that they would get a lawyer.
Right.
They were the last known people to see him.
Mm-hmm. They got into an argument with
him. They got into an argument. Yeah. It's everything that the conspiracy theories that are already blowing up are about. It's all about them, right? So mm-hmm. I don't see an issue with them getting a lawyer.
But again, a lot of people do. So, but the lead investigator is not one of those people. Now, another suspicious thing that people call out is that after the first few months, Bailey has refused to speak publicly about Chance. But according to her, that's because she and her family constantly get threats whenever she does.
Yep. Nope. I'm not saying they're completely innocent here. I don't know. But don't talk to cops. Don't talk to the media. Like, you know, like.
Well, no, because we say the opposite, too. We've said the opposite many times about the media, which is like, you've got to talk to the media. You've got to keep the story alive. But much
not,
like we've
but talked. But not months after the investigation has already started where everybody is calling you out as the prime suspect.
Right. And that's the
like
thing.
If, so, if that's the only thing that they're grasping at, whether it's media or internet conspiracy theorists or whatever, like, yeah, no, I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
You've said the timeline. You've said what you need to say. You know, are you still looking? Sure. Whatever. But like, no.
No. Yeah. And you're right. Because at that point, when people are calling you the prime suspect, how is your speaking publicly going to help the case?
Right. It's not. Especially considering the police are not calling you the prime suspect.
But people don't like that, you know? They don't like when people don't talk because they think it means you have something to hide.
People also don't like when you do talk.
Yeah. Because you're saying the wrong thing in the wrong way.
Yeah.
It's tough. The rumor that Bailey or her family had something to do with Chance's disappearance does persist. One pervasive rumor originated with a Facebook post that said, quote, honestly, though, I poured concrete at Bailey's stepfather's house in the Wildcats 6 days after his disappearance. We were supposed to do it earlier in the week, but it got delayed because they had stuff to do. And when we got there, the concrete was broken and the dirt work was done. All we had to do was pour the concrete. It was a sidewalk attached to the patio driveway that people talk about, but we had done that last year. The sidewalk was a 5x10, but they wanted it thick with rebar. I can't help but think that's where he is. If we could just get ground penetrating sonar, I'd feel so much better. End quote. Now, it turns out that this home actually belonged to a family friend, not Bailey's stepfather, but her stepfather was working on it, and he was the one who was in charge of pouring the concrete. But again, Eads, the investigator, said that they looked into this and are confident that the home is unrelated to their investigation. But what looking into it constitutes, I don't know.
Well, how far away is it?
I'm not entirely sure, but I think it's relatively close. Now, there are a few more troubling actions. Bailey sold off many of Chance's belongings, but allegedly wouldn't allow his family to buy them. She also stopped allowing Chance's family to see Banks. And about a year after his disappearance, their home went into foreclosure. It's now owned by the county. Bailey moved back to Nebraska and didn't so much as leave Chase's family with a forwarding address.
But we know that there were issues and relationships before this.
You can see these actions as suspicious, but you can also see them as the actions of an immature person who didn't get along with the Engelbert family and didn't want to have anything else to do with them now that Chance wasn't around.
Yeah, and chances are that the Engelbert family probably thinks that either her or her family had something to do with his disappearance.
Right.
So would you want to continue that relationship?
Yeah, exactly. And like, yes, they're Banks' grandparents, but you know, Banks was too young to really know them. And like, so yes, that's a selfish move to keep your son from their grandparents.
I'm not defending her actions, however.
But like, it doesn't make her a killer.
Right.
One thing that Bailey and the Engelberts seemingly agree on is that after the first week or so, the police investigation has been rather lackluster. Dawn has tried to get the state police and the FBI to take the case to no avail. Eads was asked about this on News Nation. He said that they have worked with other agencies, including the FBI, like, which is true. I mentioned that multiple agencies assisted in the initial search. But what he dances around in his answer is that they have not formally asked any other agencies to assist since then. And my opinion, based on watching this interview, is that he doesn't think that they need to. He thinks that they can just, they've got this covered. They don't need help.
They've got this stalled case that's not going anywhere covered.
Right. But as you can imagine, many people outside of the Gehring Police Department disagree. There's a change.org petition that's linked in our show notes that is asking for the FBI's involvement in Chance's case. The organizers have said that they'll keep the petition open until either the FBI does get involved or Chance is found. And in October of 2021, it looked as though Chance may have actually been found, or at least part of him. That month, a hunter found a human arm bone and shirt in Milbetta, Nebraska, near the North Platte River. And where this was located was basically downstream. So if Chance had gone into the river in or around Gehring, he could have theoretically ended up there. The bone was sent to the University of Nebraska Crime Lab for DNA analysis. Unfortunately, because of the age of the bone and the fact that it had been underwater, the lab was unable to complete the analysis. The bone was then sent to a lab in Florida for testing, but as of January 2022, that had not been completed. However, that month, authorities did publicly state that they didn't believe the bone belonged to Chance.
Just because?
Well, no, it's a decent reason, right? Like, they're not definitively saying that it's not his, but when they found the bone, they kind of looked back through their missing persons cases and tried to figure out who it could possibly belong to, right? And they came up with Chance, and another man, Walter Jean Patterson Black. He went missing in the area in 2016. The shirt that was found with the arm, the part of the shirt, was closer in appearance to the long-sleeved tan plaid shirt that Patterson Black was wearing than the short-sleeved blue button-down worn by Chance.
That's fair.
Yeah. But as of this recording, which is August of 2022, the DNA results still have not come back, so it cannot be 100% ruled out. At the end of the day, we don't know what happened to Chance Engelbert. With the extensive searches performed, it didn't seem likely that he was in the river, but if Jean Patterson Black had been in there since 2016 and wasn't found by the search parties, maybe it is possible. I don't know if Bailey or her family had anything to do with Chance's disappearance, but I do think they need to be looked into hard. Because if foul play did happen here, it likely was by somebody he knew. And he wasn't from the area. Bailey and her family were the only people that he knew there. Bailey has said that she and her family have been questioned and homes have been searched, but I want cell phone data. I don't know, other than Chance's cell phone data, what police have looked into in those terms. I want to know if they pulled the geolocation data for her phone, for the grandparents' phones, her father, or her sister's boyfriend. I want to know if their cell phone pings line up with Chance's at all in the evening. I also want to know about that Jeep. Specifically, how much Garing police have actually investigated it. To me, like, those are the burning questions that authorities should be finding answers to.
That's where you would think the investigation would go. But I don't know if they're going to release that.
And that's fine. I just don't know that they would have dug that hard in the first place.
That's also a potential possibility.
Chance's family basically lost Chance and Banks on the same day. I sincerely hope that they'll be able to repair the relationship with Bailey enough to be able to be a part of Banks's life. They don't believe that Chance is alive any longer, but they want to make sure he's not forgotten, and they want to bring him home so that they can give him a proper goodbye. Chance Engelbert is a white male with brown hair and blue eyes. He's approximately 5'10" tall and 195 pounds. He was last seen wearing a short-sleeve button-up Wrangler shirt, dark blue Wrangler jeans, Roper-style boots, and a black and white trucker hat. Chance was 25 when he went missing. He would be 28 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Chance Engelbert, please contact the Garing Police Department at 308-436-5089 or Crime Stoppers at 308-632-7867. Chance's family has also set up an anonymous tip line at 724-466-4673. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
Be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And this episode is airing on August 26th, which is the Hey You Can Do It kid's birthday. So yay, happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!